ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोश्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ऐ विल् स्पीक् वेरि ब्रीफ्लि अबौट् दि ड्यूटीस् आफ् हौस् होल्डर्स्। हौ डस् गाड् इन् दि फार्म् आफ् एन् इन्कार्नेशन् एस्टाब्लिश् धर्म। धर्म केन् बि एस्टाब्लिश्ड् ओन्ली त्रू Varna and Ashrama. What is Varna? The division of all people into four categories depending upon what type of quality has got. Sattva, Rajas are Tamas. Those who have more Sattva are called Brahmins. Those who are called more Rajas are called Kshatriyas or Warriors. Those who are having more of Rajas but influenced by Tamas as merchants or Vaishyas, and those who have more tamas and dominated by rajas, they are called Shudras. This is not to denigrate anybody, but every human being can be classified in that way. And the only way to progress forward, it is a matter of evolution. Evolution physically, mentally, morally and spiritually takes place only in the form of trying to go from tamas, reduce tamas and increase rajas. Reduce rajas and increase sattva. And let that be a natural condition, not a condition induced. For example, at the time of prayer, most people are endowed with sattva guna. But sattva guna should be more dominant. So this is how every human being are guided by this scripture, not to condemn them that you are like this. Eternally you will not be like this. But if you struggle in the right way, you will move from tamas to rajas to sattva, and ultimately you will transcend all the three gunas and come to know who you really are. And that is how Bhagavan, in the form of an avatara, tries to help humanity by living his life and showing us this highest ideal. Then in each individual life, there are four stages of growth. Usually, we all understand them as brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprasthi and sannyasi. These are not fixed positions, but going forward in spiritual life, these four states are growth in the growth of consciousness. So man is traveling from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. So that is what we need to understand. And we have been talking about, of all these stages, the stage of that being which is called Grihasthashrama is most important. In that context, Swami Vivekananda has taken from Mahanirvana Tantra how each householder is supposed to behave. In our last class, we discussed certain very important points, how parents are to be treated, how a husband should treat the wife, and also how a householder should look upon every woman, not only his wife, but every other woman. And how a householder should live in such a way and be an ideal to his children. Then a householder also should be a hero, and he should be not be consenting to wickedness or unrighteousness. He must protest as a good citizen. If he doesn't do, he is simply not going to progress in spiritual life. Because that is the bounden duty of every householder. One point we need to highlight is, mostly these duties are how a man should behave towards his family, friends, society, etc. But very little is mentioned here how a wife should behave. Exactly the same things with slight differences. How a wife should treat her husband, how first of all she should look upon her own self. Secondly, how to bring up the children, how to have right relationship, not only with her own parents and brothers and sisters, but every relationship that comes along with the husband. How she should look upon the society as a whole. And above all, she must be very chaste person. What is chastity? It is very much a misunderstood concept. Chastity is only defined in this way, and that is the correct way. Every person, especially our husband or wife, they should look upon each other. Husband should look upon the wife, wife should look upon the husband as a divinity, manifestation of divinity, a plant which is slowly attaining to its own full glory and helping each other so that our weaknesses will be helped, and then we become even more strong, thus helping each other, we should progress towards life. So main things we have discussed in this, a few more are there, I am going to discuss and then we will go forward. So Swamiji continues, a householder must struggle to acquire a good name by all means. Let us remember here, it's not only the husband, but it applies equally to the wife with slight difference. So both of them. A wife or a householder must not gamble. He must not move in the company of the wicked. He must not tell lies and must not be the cause of troubles to others. So also the wife. A householder must speak the truth and speak gently, using words which people like, which will do good to others. Nor should he talk of the business of other men. In this paragraph, two particular points we have to take note. There is a famous saying in Sanskrit, Satyam Bruyat, Priyam Bruyat, Nabruyat Satyam, Apriyam. What does it really mean? Satyam Bruyat. Only truth must be told. But at the same time, what type of truth? Priyam. Priyam means not what one likes, what one is pleased with. What we have to understand really, here priyam means that which does good, even if we harm other people, but ultimately it is going to do good to them and to everybody else. So that is the called priyam. That which is beneficial to oneself as well as to all other people. That is the most important point we have to understand here. That is called the what is called satyam. And if it doesn't do benefit, we should never speak about it. That is the first point. This is not Swamiji's words, this is scriptural words. Nor he should indulge in the business of other men. Every person has got something or the other, but it should be in such a way that we should not waste our time by indulging in things, whether it is activities or speech or cultivating company, anything that will stand in the way of our spiritual progress. That's a most important point we will have to understand. Then the householder, by digging tanks, by planting trees on the roadsides, by establishing rest houses for men and animals, by making roads, building bridges, goes towards the same goal as the greatest yogi. There are two concepts in our scriptures. One is called Ishta and another is called Purta. Ishta means the puja, meditation, pilgrimages, etc., which benefits a person individually, making him progress in spiritual life. Whereas Purta means that which benefits the public, like digging wells, tanks, roads, bridges, dharmashalas, where wandering sadhus even beggars, they get regular food, etc. I think we remember at Kamarpukur, we see that some great soul had constructed a dharmashala, and so many sadhus on their way to Ganga Sagar, they used to take advantage of this place, stay there. That is how Sri Ramakrishna, as a young boy called Gadadhar, came into contact with these sadhus, and he had highly developed power of observation. He used to observe who are pretending to be monks, who are genuine monks, and he used to ridicule these pretending monks, hypocritical monks. But those who are genuinely monks, he used to serve them, and they used to love him. They taught him many wonderful songs, bhajans. They taught him what the ancient people used to say. And when we study the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, quite a number of them are what Sri Ramakrishna had received from these monks from different places. So, these dharmashalas, etc., doing, in other words, working for the welfare of the whole world in one's, according to one's own capacity. This is the duty of a householder. Then the wife also, she should always cook a little bit extra, so that at noon, either a beggar or a sadhu, etc., wandering sadhus come across, then she should be able to feed them properly so that they will bless her. Now here a question comes, because many people, so-called, those who label themselves self-stamped persons, we are very clever people. Are we not encouraging beggars or irresponsibility, escapism from the duties and responsibilities of life, etc.? Now that is completely what we call irrelevant thought for all of us. We don't know. There may be, if 99 people are hypocrites and cheats, but if one genuine person is there, helping that one genuine person is much more beneficial than anything else in this world. And who knows, maybe a great realized soul comes in the form of an ordinary sadhu. He may be even appearing like a madcap, or like a ghoul, or like a inert person. And who knows, maybe it is very true. You know, once Swami Vivekananda was put this question, India is full of these fake sannyasins, and still Hindus respect them. And then Swami Vivekananda had given a very beautiful reply. He said, say, supposing there are 100,000 fake monks, out of that, if there are 4 or 5 good sadhus, sincere, genuine sadhus are there, that is the one of the greatest helps anybody can make in this world. These are the some of the most important duties. And why our scripture is so insistent upon it is, at what, after all, what is spirituality? Spirituality is to become less selfish, identify ourselves with the whole, because the whole world is nothing but God. So we have to identify with the God, and that is done in front of our eyes. The God whom we are seeking is manifested in the form of this whole universe as it is. That is the reason why unselfishness is very, very important. When a person realizes God, automatically he becomes very unselfish, because he says, I see God everywhere. And that is what is so beautifully said, in the expressed in the Isavasya Upanishad, Isavasya Medagum Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha Magridaha Kasya Siddhvanam. Very plain way of translating this mantra is, here I want to clarify one point. Whenever we are quoting from any Upanishads, it is called Vedas, and therefore we use them not as shlokas but as mantra. When we are talking about Smritis, Mahabharata, Ramayana, Bhagavatam, Dharma Shastras, including Bhagavad Gita, etc., we use the word shloka. So in the first mantra of the Ishavasya Upanishad, Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha Ma Gridaha Kasya Svidhanam. Ma Gridaha. Do not covet Kasya Svidhanam. Anybody's property. That means simple words is, do not become selfish at all. Do not wish for any type of knowledge, any type of property or object. Only one thing you should seek really, that is God. Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha. Tena means whatever God ordains, with that you enjoy your life, your allotted life, and try to progress in spiritual life. Magridaha, do not covet anything else, excepting trying to enjoy your life as allotted by God. This is one meaning, but it is a very simple meaning. There is a very deep meaning here. Tena means by that knowledge. What knowledge is that? By that this whole world in front of us is nothing but God. A beautiful poem has been written by Swamiji. It says, where seekest thou that God? He who is in front of you in the form of everything in this world, both living as well as non-living. This is the idea so beautifully composed by Kabir Das. Moko kaha dhunde re bande, O slave, O my servant, where are you searching for me? Mai to tere paas me ho. What does that mean? I am just by your side. What does it mean by the side? I am within you, I am you. I am besides you, I am outside you, I am in the form of everything you experience. In other words, I only am manifesting in your form. I am only manifesting in the form of the world. I am only enjoying the whole world in the form of each individual. That is what is so clearly expressed. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat. Whether you look at your own body, at your own mind, or at any object in this world, this entire world, Isha, by God, Avasyam. Avasyam means literally, you should cover the whole world with God. It doesn't mean God is a cloth and here is an object and you cover it. It means you remove your ignorance that this is a tree, this is a man, this is a dog, etc. And then you see, this is God in the form of a tree, this is God in the form of a dog, this is God in the form of a man, etc. That is what Swami Vivekananda means, Shiva Jnane Jiva Seva. Do not look upon any jiva, any creature as a jiva. That means separate from you and is limited, ignorant, poor, etc. No, look upon the whole universe as nothing but complete God only, as God only. So that is what is all these preparations, whether you go on a pilgrimage or whether you dig a tank. For whom are you digging a tank? For yourself. Maybe next birth you will be a monk. Next birth you may be a beggar. Next birth you may be a poor man. The idea is be unselfish. That is the idea. So Swamiji, he says that you reduce your selfishness and that is part of spiritual progress. These are very briefly some of the duties of the householders. But only do only householders have duties, or do brahmachari ashramas, inmates, students, brahmacharis, do they have their own separate duties, do's and don'ts? Yes. What about vanaprasthis? Yes, do's and don'ts. What about sannyasins? Yes, do's and don'ts. I will only point out two things about the sannyasins. Every sannyasi's duty is adhyayana and adhyapana. That means every sannyasin should study the scriptures and then try to progress in spiritual life, having complete faith in the scriptures. But the other side is even more important. This person, whatever little he knows, he should share unselfishly, not only with people whom he likes or who are nearer to him. Anybody who is a fit person and a seeker, that person should be imparted. This is called adhyapana, has nothing to do with scriptures. When you use the word scripture, there may be persons who have not studied or who cannot study. For example, Latu Maharaj. But whatever he heard from Sri Ramakrishna and he practiced it, and then he realized so many truths during the course of his travel from his little self to that universal self, and he experienced many, many things, and those things he should share, and he did share with lots of people, and that's why the study of great people's teachings along with their lives is very necessary. Here is a very important point we have to understand. Merely studying the scriptures will not do. We are studying here the gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. But it will be a thousandfold more useful if at every stage we quote the incidents from the lives of these great souls, for example, from the life of Sri Ramakrishna. And that is why I bring so many times certain incidents that have happened here, so that their teachings will be reinforced, because these people really practiced before they started teaching. Sri Ramakrishna never taught anything to anybody until he completed his sadhana. And then only he received the commandment from the Divine Mother. Now starts the next phase of your spiritual life, which is to distribute it to other people. In this connection, I remember clearly one incident from the life of Bhagavan Buddha. He had renounced the world for 6 years. Superhuman tapasya he had done. And then one day, at his Vaisakha Purnima, he had realized what his true nature is, that is, I am Brahman. Even though he doesn't use the word, we have to use that word because that is the truth. Then it is said in one of the Puranas there, Buddhistic Puranas, not our Puranas, probably, I don't remember, Lalita Vistara Purana, that Buddha had gone round the Bodhi tree, the tree under which he attained Bodha, that is called Bodhi tree. It is supposed to be in Gaya. 14 days, he was in a tremendously ecstatic state, dancing and going round and round, enjoying indescribable bliss, ananda. Then, at the end of the 14th day, he decided to give up his body. Then Brahma appeared and requested him that, Bhagavan, you will have to teach what you have learned to the whole world. And then Buddha said, who is there to seek my teachings? Are there really anybody who is running after these spiritual teachings? I do not see. Then Brahma seems to have replied. He said, there are 3 types of people in this world. 99% of the people, they don't want your teachings, they don't want spirituality, they are only running after worldly things. For such people, your teachings are totally useless. There are a very few people who have struggled hard, realized God, and they have gone beyond the shore of the samsara sagara. For them, also they do not need your teachings. The first type, worldly people, they don't want your teachings. Second type of people, they don't need your teachings. But there are quite a number of people, may not be too many. They are struggling sincerely, seekers, and your teachings will come to great aid for these people. Then Buddha understood, said, yes, I will dedicate my whole life hereafter to spread my experiences. And Buddha was one of the known incarnations who have lived until the ripe old age of 80 years. And constantly, continuously, he spent his time only in teaching. And there is one last incident in his life. At the age of 80, Buddha decided to give up his body. Remember, this is very special. Every incarnation, so far as we know, they decide to give up their bodies. I'll give you four examples. Sri Rama had accomplished his mission of destroying the evil forces in the name of Ravanasura and his cronies. So the time has come, his mission was accomplished, but either he forgot or for whatever reason he was not thinking about it. Then in Ramanama we get Kala Vedita Surapadaram. Kala had come, a divine messenger has come, said, Rama, why are you not returning to Vaikuntha? You have accomplished your purpose. There is nothing further to be accomplished by you. Please come. And then immediately Rama said, yes, tomorrow itself I am going to return to my Swasthana, Vaikuntha. Don't think that Vaikuntha means only Vishnu. Shiva has no place there. These are all ignoramuses. Shiva, Vishnu, or Brahma, or by whatever name, Allah, they're all one and the same reality. So next day we know he announced to people that I am going to go back to my own place. He did not say I am going to die. He didn't say I am going to commit suicide. I am going to go back to my place. My mission is, whoever wants to come with me, I will also give them liberation. I will take them with me to Vaikuntha. And then everybody, the whole Ayodhya opted for it, and they all just joyfully walked into the Sarayu river, and then they just bent down, dipped themselves in the water, and then they found themselves in Vaikuntha. Here is a very funny incident also was there. Previous night, Sri Rama called his most ardent devotee Hanuman, and he said, Hanuman, tomorrow my mission on earth will be over. I am going back to Vaikuntha. You must come with me. And Hanuman, being a South Indian, made Sashtanga pranams. This is the difference between how to know who is a South Indian and who is a North Indian. And if two devotees come to you and one person may make namaskaram or even make bent pranam, so surely you will come to know that he is a North Indian devotee. But here is another person, and with both hands he catches the opposite ears and makes a sashtanga pranam. And you will know by that he is definitely a South Indian, not North Indian, a South Indian. Because only South India, that system is there. Anyway, whatever it is, what are we talking? So Hanuman made one sashtanga pranam and he said, no. Rama, seemingly, he pretended that he was surprised and said, Hanuman, don't you love me? Of course, you are my Lord. I love you. I love only you. And I don't want to love anybody. Then come with me to Vaikuntha. Another sashtanga pranam. No. An emphatic, definitive, decisive no. Then Sri Rama pretended to be surprised and said, why is it that you do not wish to come with me? After all, you are my greatest devotee. And Hanuman seemed to have replied, Rama, when you go back to Vaikuntha, what dress will you be wearing? There is a special dress in that green room, and it has got four hands, Gada, Padma, etc. And that form I don't like. I don't like that form. What form do we like? I was Srinathe, Janaki Nathe, अभेदः परमात्मनि, तथापि मम सर्वस्वः रामः कमललोचनः. दि लोटस् ऐ ड्रामा. हु इस् दि डियरेस्ट् बीयिङ्ग् टु मै मदर् सीता, जानकी देवी. ऐ ओन्ली वाण्ट् टु सी आल् दि टैम् दट् पर्टिक्युलर् फार्म् आफ् रामा with bow and arrows etc., not that Vishnu with four hands, the husband of Lakshmi. I don't like the form of Lakshmi's husband. I only like the form of Sita and Sita's husband. This is called, according to Sri Ramakrishna, Ishta Nishta. But don't think that this should continue for all the time. Each one of us must develop this Ishta Nishta, cross the bridge of the samsara sagara, then it is only then he they know sarvam karvilidam brahma, everything is nothing but. That is the example from Sri Rama. He announced, I am going to give up. Could he have postponed? Definitely, because he who made the rule, he can also break the rule. Sri Krishna, he called his Uddhava, gave him a most marvelous discourse which we get even better than Bhagavad Gita, I would say, full brimming with bhakti, soaked in the syrup of sweetest loving devotion, called Uddhava Gita, last message of Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna Sandesha, etc. This comes the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The entire 11th chapter of the Bhagavatam is called Uddhava Gita. So there he called Uddhava, gave him instructions, told him clearly that very soon I am going to give up the body and this is the time has come. I sent already all the other gopas and gopis, everybody, and now it is time for me to give up. So he called Balarama and said, you, Adisesha, you give up your body. And next day, he laid himself down under a bush, under a tree, as though appearing it is the leg of a deer, and a hunter's arrow had to pierce his sole of the foot, and then only he consoled that hunter and said, I am blessing you. Actually, it is my will, not your aparadha or crime you have committed. And then he gave up the body. Buddha, that is where we are coming. Buddha, he came to know that at the age of 80 years, the time has come for his Mahaparinirvana. And then he called Ananda and said, Ananda, do you have any doubts? I would like, because Tathagata will not live here for a long time. And then Ananda was shedding tears. Buddha chided him and said, what have you learnt from me? For the past so many years I have been talking that where there is birth, there will be death, and life is full of suffering, and you will have to progress in spiritual life by following the 8-stepped way that I have unfolded before you. And even now, like a worldly person, you are crying. Of course, you know, we don't cry because we think that death is a painful thing. We cry because of our love. So Ananda had such deep devotion for Buddha to think that he is going to live without the presence of Bhagavan Buddha was even unthinkable. So he was crying. Now there was a sannyasi. He was at a distance, some miles away. And he came to know that Buddha was going to give up his body, and then somehow he came to know, he had doubts, and he said, in this whole world that there is not one single person who can remove my doubts. Only Bhagavan Buddha can do so. So he hurried, and by that time already Buddha was preparing to enter into, to withdraw his mind and go into samadhi. That is called Mahaparinirvana. And then Ananda prevented him. Sorry, I would have allowed you, but Bhagavan has already, as withdrawing his mind, he will give up his body tonight. This conversation was heard by Buddha And he called Ananda and said, Ananda, do not prevent anybody. It is my mission that I am still not entered into that Mahaparinirvana, and until my last breath, if anybody comes, I will try to help him to, if my words can help that person progress in spiritual life. He called the monk, cleared his doubts, blessed him, sent him away and entered into Mahaparinirvana. We have to meditate upon these marvelous acts. Similarly, Sri Ramakrishna was on deathbed and he called one of his disciples and asked him to bring an almanac, and then he fixed a date. But that was, such was the mesmerization, he hypnotized his devotees that they could not guess. Sri Ramakrishna was fixing a date for his departure. Then he made everybody very happy. Sometimes he cuts jokes to make them very happy. But long before he predicted, when my mission is complete, my divine mother will not allow this body to live longer time. But Sri Ramakrishna put it in a very funny way. One day Sri Ramakrishna expressed it to Holy Mother. He said, this body will not stay for long time. This soon this body has to be given up. And Holy Mother, of course, at that time, she was still maturing into the Divine Mother that she had to become afterwards. Then she started weeping. For her, it was impossible to imagine that she could live without Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna was Prananatha. There is, without him, there is no other prana. Then he said, look, see, there many people are going to come. When so many people start rushing to this place, seeking advice, etc., and know that the time for me to give up the body has come. I wish this body could stay for some time more so that many more people could get benefit. But seeing my innocence, so many people will take away what doesn't belong to them and what for what they are not fit to receive, and that is why mother will not keep this body for a long time. Seeing my innocence, people take advantage of it like that. I will give a small example. There was a man who was suffering very much from this married life, and one day he came to Sri Ramakrishna with tears in his eyes, fell at his feet. And then Sri Ramakrishna became melted with compassion and said, tomorrow you bring some sweets. Sweets means, he specified actually, jalebi. And I will eat up your karma, so you do not need to suffer from this samsaric life. And then the man had actually brought, but Sri Ramakrishna could not touch it. Mother didn't allow him to touch. He said, sadly, I wanted to eat up your karma, but my mother is not allowing, and I think there is a lot of prarabdha for you to suffer. Now, here an interesting question that comes is, Sri Ramakrishna said that I will eat up, and the person who said I will eat up your karma is the child who has melted in compassion and wanted to help this person. But for eating up that karma, this child cannot eat up. That should be mother, divine mother manifesting through Sri Ramakrishna. She alone can eat up the karma. But it was his prarabdha, and she did not allow Sri Ramakrishna to eat. But in some other cases, yes, he did eat up and removed their prarabdha karma, but not as the child, but as the divine mother. God can do anything. Anyway, it is a mystery why the Divine Mother did not remove that person's suffering, even though genuinely he took refuge under Sri Ramakrishna. I cannot explain, but I am just giving you. So, the day the mission was complete, Sri Ramakrishna knew beforehand, voluntarily, cheerfully, and nobody knew, like Swami Vivekananda, he completely decided to eat. The pudding was he was able to eat because of the throat cancer. That day he seemed to have enjoyed the pudding. Suji pies, we call it, rave pies, we call it. And then cheerfully he enjoyed, he took more quantity, and by 1 o'clock he had given up his body at night. Swami Vivekananda's case also we know. He called his disciple Sharat Chandra, fixed a date, and then he went. Now the important point is that once, say, Nivedita heard that Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ram Krishna foretold about Narendra, the day he comes to know who he is, he will give up his body, he will refuse to be here on this earth even for 1 second longer. But he told Narendra Nath, Sri Ramakrishna told Narendra Nath, that only when you complete my mother's mission, then only the box will be opened up and you will be allowed to enjoy Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Then Sister Nivedita just one day came, and this event happened few days before Swami Vivekananda's passing away. Then she did not know what was brewing. She asked, Swamiji, do you know who you are? Instantaneously, an emphatic, yes, I know who I am. And Sister Nivedita felt shocked. That means she knew he was not going to live for a long time. But foolish people we are, Swami Vivekananda was going on giving hints for the last 1 or 2 years that there is not much time left. But nobody took his words seriously, thinking that he was tired and he was just saying something like that. Now what is the point of giving all these 5 examples I have given? That is to say that we have a fixed life. These great people, they practice first of all what they want to preach, and when their time has come, voluntarily, happily, they go away. That is an ideal for all of us. When we are studying their works, we have to recollect various incidents which will highlight, give us right understanding about what they have been teaching and preaching to us. Only in this context, Swami Vivekananda is quoting all these things, the duties. What is it? When Sri Ramakrishna was having his conversation with M. Remember, the whole gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is his conversations with various people, devotees, both monastic and lay, but much less of monastics, only mostly householder disciples, and most of it is only with M, and when other devotees also used to come. And for that, duties of householders, there are certain chapters, advice to householders, how they should behave. And if we recollect what we have been studying, and then read that particular chapter, advice to householders, then his teachings become much more clearer to all of us. So, Swami Vivekananda is saying all this because how an avatara establishes dharma, that how do we progress in spiritual life by following varna dharma and ashrama dharma. These are steps to progress, to evolve towards God or towards our own real self. Out of that, the duties of householders are most important, because most devotees are householders in this world. Having described all these things, very briefly of course, Swami Vivekananda is concluding. This is one part of the doctrine of Karma Yoga. Activity, the duty of the householder. And then he himself summarizes what he meant. One idea comes out of all this, the condemnation of all weakness. What is spirituality? Growing from strength to strength. What is spirituality? Growing from fear to fearlessness. From bhaya to abhaya. What is bhaya? Is people do not understand. If there is something dangerous and that gives us fear, and somehow we have to get out of that fear, that is a very gross idea. Fear here means insecurity. Life is full of insecurity. When Buddha issued this statement, life is full of suffering. He is not talking glibly about headache or cold or COVID or some of the things that we experience. In reality, he is talking more about existential suffering. Life is what we call Shad Urmi, six waves, birth, growth, confirmation, birth, confirmation, growth, old age, disease, and death. These are called Shad Vikara, sixfold changes, Shad Urmi, sixfold waves agitating the ocean of life. And there are certain existential sufferings which cannot be avoided. Saint or sinner, rich or poor, powerful or powerless, everybody has to go through all this. That's why Buddha became so old, Sri Ramakrishna had to suffer from cancer, and everybody has to go through this suffering. That is common and that has nothing to do. But there is another type of suffering that is out of our own pure prarabdha karma. That's why since the topic came, there are three causes of suffering. The first cause is, it is the world's nature. If it is winter, it will be cold. If it is summer, it will be hot. If there are too many mosquitoes, we will get the problem from mosquitoes. Enemies, wicked people, floods, famines, and all these things. This is nothing to do with us. It is what you call Adi Bhautika. This is the nature of the world. Then added to that, there is a second type of suffering, and that is purely individual, and that comes as a result of our own past karma, which is called prarabdha, which is called fate, we call it luck, bad luck or good luck or whatever it is. Happiness, unhappiness is purely our own doing, and that is extra, that is added to worldly existential suffering. Then there is a third type of suffering, probably most of you would not remember or would not guess. God's grace. Holy Mother confirms it. Suffering is the grace of God. When God wants to uplift some of His beloved children, the first thing He sends to them is terrible affliction. But it is not that He wants to be vengeful, and He wants to take revenge or enjoys the suffering like a cat enjoying playing with the mouse. A very beautiful saying is there, life is nothing but a cat and mouse play. And some wise crack has quoted this one. Yes, it is a play for the cat, but what about the mouse, the rat? Is it a play for it, the cat playing with it? Like that, God's grace, if it comes in the form of terrible misery, is it a play? Yes, it is a play, because that's what Holy Mother says, that is what the scriptures say. In Bhagavatam, Bhagavan Krishna specifically promises, I do not remember that exact shloka, but this is the essence. When I decide to bestow my grace and uplift a particular devotee, the very first thing I do is take away all that belongs to him and make him akinchana. Kinchana means having something. Akinchana means this person will not possess anything, so that he can come to me, because anatha natha, when there is nobody who can help him, the helpless person, there is only one help. Shripati, even allopathy, homeopathy, naturopathy or any pathies cannot help. Only one pathy mode of chikitsa will help us. That is called Shripati. Only God can help us. So the grace of God very often comes to His sincere spiritual aspirants in the form of some suffering. And this is what I call fast track. Otherwise, join the queue and wait hours and hours. But here is the fast track. And when this fast track is applied to devotee and it is a little bit painful, God will be pulling him from bottom of the mountain straight through a rope, and there will be jagged rocks everywhere on his path. He will be bruised, he will be bleeding, and he will be having pain. But in the quickest possible time, he will reach the goal. Now, don't think that you have a choice. When you surrender yourself, every day sing, as I am taking refuge in you, O Lord, and then the Lord decides. This person's mouth has uttered the word, to he or she took refuge in me, and I will take pity, I will pull that person. This is a most marvelous perspective when you are going all the suffering and you certify yourself that I am a great devotee of God because you utter a little bit of his name with 90% sleep and 10% inattention and 2% restlessness and occasionally remembering him a little bit from a distance, and you think you have got a right to demand whatever you want, I am your child, and even then he will bestow his grace, and then that will be in the form of suffering. I am not joking, this is what happens to every devotee. Study now the lives of great people, see how happily from day to day they're cutting what is called drinking, dancing, singing. They made their way to God. Every saint's life is strewn with these jagged rocks, etc. And that is the only thing which can bring us to our senses. And duty is very painful. That's why Swami Vivekananda said, when somebody said, it is our duty to live like this, he looked at her and said, Madam, duty is like the scorching midday sun. And the lady was so stunned, so shocked at this reply. For 5 days she could not get up from the bed. By the way, I am just telling you that even casually when Swami Vivekananda utters these words, it can affect people so deeply. Everybody in that camp at the Thousand Island Park were shocked to find this lady had no strength to get up from the bed for five days after she heard from Swami Vivekananda. We must get out of every duty, free soul. We are free souls. We are divine beings. A divine being has no duty at all. But the way to attain that divinity, to manifest that divinity, which is our own real nature, is to go through the duties, and if done properly, the duties will throw us up out of the duty. And I make fun, when you are studying in a school, this school tries its level best to kick you out of a lower class to a higher class, from a higher class to still a higher class, until it succeeds in kicking you out completely out of the gate of the school. That is the school's bounden duty, and it is life's bounden duty to kick us all out so that we land in the other side of the court, which is God. And we have reached home, and then we will forever be free. So with this, we have completed one of the most important sections of the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna on how we can progress in spiritual life, especially a householder, only by the discharge of all his duties in a spiritual mood, having a spiritual attitude. But every duty must be done correctly, with concentration, with bhakti, with joy, and without expecting any results. This is called karma yoga. All these teachings can be properly called karma yoga. Today's class, I will stop here. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all ವಿದ್ಭಕ್ತಿ.